Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is Nzuri Moyo Mbaye, and it means beautiful heart that sings.
And I am Jehuti Sehotep, which means one who makes peace of mind by reconciling the opposites.
Welcome to Souling with Nzuri and Jehuti. Wow, 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 wow. Here we are again. This is Nzuri live and coming at you. Souling tonight. Ready to have a good time. How about you, baby?
I am. And I'll tell you, we had a nice souling walk, in fact. And in the park, right here in our neighborhood, and just going over to the pond area and just sitting down on the grass and looking up at the blue sky.
Honey, wait, now stop teasing everybody. You know everybody's freezing. Everybody's freezing when we're out, and today it was like incredible. The weather was so beautiful. I usually like have to have a jacket. I mean, this weather was like perfect. It was heaven weather. It was the souling weather, okay? It sold my soul, all right? It was amazing. And we were out there walking and took our shoes off, and I laid on the grass and did some souling yoga and, you know, and hugged some trees. Oh, it was amazing, amazing.
It was, amazing. It was. And we even got a little glimpse, as I was telling you, as the low cloud cover as it was passing slowly by. As the sun was going down, we got the effect of a rainbow effect bouncing off of the cloud. The glare of it created a rainbow atmosphere in the sky, and it was just an awesome sight. And
enough teasing. Everybody's freezing all over the country, babe. Okay.
Indeed. So that means that we gotta share with them, you know, the vision of this experience. Although it's all good, the euphemism is it's all God.
It is
and
all God.
Whether it's cold or hot or whatever the temperature or the weather that you're in, it is all God, and it's all souling, no matter where you are. And that's the reality of it all.
I do like when it's cold, like, you know, like getting real close and hugging you. So that's the good part of when it's cold.
You're
a person you can cuddle with.
Yeah, something else, I tell you. This woman just gets cold easy, okay? But I enjoy every bit of it. I've got special names for the different type of snuggles we have. So I have I have what I call the cosmic cuddle. So that's so the cosmic cuddle is one type of cuddling, right?
Yeah,
and of course that has the cosmic effect, as you can hear
hypnotic.
The in the phone line.
hypnotic effect. It's amazing.
Yeah, and then we have the standard cup cuddle, and it also has its characteristics or attributes and benefits, right?
And it's very healing.
Indeed. And
you can't be mad. You can't be angry at each other doing these cuddles, these hugs. No, anger goes out. There's no anger. You can't have anger, and you can't have really any underlying anger. So we get all of that stuff out the way.
Yeah, you can't be hiding something from each other when you're in that close proximity for any length of time. because if there's any thoughts in your mind, they're going to bubble up from the unconscious or that which has been not, you haven't been dealing with, it's going to surface. And so it creates a very healing environment.
So I'm going to tell him, honey, about your Valentine's Day dinner I made. I surprised you.
You did. And it was a surprise because here I am thinking, y'all, okay, all right. You got me. You got me. You got me. So I came home with two dozen roses.
Red.
And that was actually what? Was it a day or a couple of days before?
It was a couple of days before.
Okay, Valentine's Day. And so here we are now, and it's Valentine's Day, and Missouri says, well, what are you going to have for dinner? And I says, well, I don't know, whatever, because I'm not picky. She always gets on me about helping her and deciding what to prepare, and I'm saying, whatever you make, I'm going to be happy, because she's a fabulous cook, y'all, okay? She's just a fabulous cook. And, boy, I'm just blessed in so many departments. So anyway, she says, okay, well, you know, just make you one of those, you know, I like avocado sandwiches. You know, it's one of my specialties. And
his only specialty.
Well, I'll make a mean salad.
Oh, yeah. And whenever you decide to do it.
And salads and juicing, juice.
Yeah, juicing. That's right. Tonight's dinner is going to be a green juice. It's beautiful, too. It's emerald green.
Yeah. So anyway, so she says, oh, well, you know, let's make yourself one of those avocado sandwiches. And it was something you said.
And make me one.
Oh, you said make you one. But it was something else you said that I detected that there was something inconsistent about what you were saying to me. And I got on you a little bit. I says, honey, you need to be more clear in what you're conveying to me. Well, little did I know, y'all, I walked down to the kitchen thinking that I'm preparing something. And I noticed that she was just walking real close behind me. Right. And as I get into the kitchen, I turn around and there's a big smile on her face. And I say, what is this? What is all of this? And she had prepared
Indian jalfrezi, vegetarian Indian jalfrezi. It's an Indian dish from the northern part of India.
Yeah.
And it was my first time. How was it?
It was awesome. It was awesome, as usual, as to be expected. And then you had some Jamaican rice and peas, as they call it, but it's red beans and rice.
Coconut,
I don't know where the
rice and peas coconut.
Name come from. But,
yeah, coconut rice and peas.
And so we had a fabulous dinner, y'all. Okay, it was scrumptious. And so the simplicity of souling. So since we're talking about that, once again revisit the simplicity of what souling is about and how we understand this compound word, S-O-U-L-I-N, souling, consisting of the two English words, but what did it really derive from? Now, how I have defined souling is that it's an action word, right? And that souling is expressing compassion towards oneself, like a nice walk in the park, like lying out on the grass and pondering and reflecting into the sky, and loving yourself first. But what's key is in the definition of souling, it is expressing compassion to yourself. Like Whitney Houston used to sing about, the greatest love of all, which was her tragic end, is learning that and understanding that. And the central crisis of humanity is identity, being distressed in that space. As we go in, soul in, learning to love ourselves, then it's easier to project that which is in our outer world, our relationships that are around us, in our intermediate space and expanded space. So I'd just like to share what Merriam-Webster and Cambridge Dictionary, how do they define
souling? Is compassion towards oneself and others. It is a compound word consisting of the words soul and in, used as a verb to denote positive action. Now, according to Merriam-Webster and Cambridge Dictionaries, soul is understood to be a noun or an adjective. Soul as a noun is defined as the spiritual or immaterial part of a human being or an animal, regarded as immortal. Also, a person's moral or emotional nature or sense of identity. Secondly, soul is the emotional or intellectual energy or intensity, especially as revealed in a work of art or an artistic performance. Third, soul is a strong positive feeling, as of intense sensitivity and emotional fervor, conveyed especially by African or Black American performers. Fourth, soul is a cultural consciousness and pride among people of African heritage, such as soul music, soul food, soul brother. And fifth, soul is a person that shows affection or pity, thus compassion, which means a sympathetic consciousness for others' distress, with a desire to alleviate it. In is to denote being enclosed or surrounded by, or in our case, to denote direction, as to say inner versus outer or inside versus outside. Thus, souling is compassion towards oneself and others.
Let's bring you back, sweetie. Okay, babe.
Yeah,
go
I'm
ahead.
Still learning.
Go
I'm
ahead.
Still learn. I'm still learning that. I have the tendency, and I guess I'm not alone in this, is that, for instance, I had a friend who, a colleague friend kind of combination, who, I had been calling and calling and calling. We had been talking, and then all of a sudden, the friend just stopped answering my calls. And I thought it was something that I did, you know? And I'm realizing this, a part of this is our ego. Our ego always thinks that it's about us. Comes to find out that this person had lost their mate. And it had nothing at all to do with me. And I just started saying, you know, you need to really give yourself a break. And that was a really big, big lesson for me, to stop thinking that, you know, my mother used to say, this is a kittenism, one of my mother's sayings. And my husband is trying to get me to write the book. But one of her sayings is, let it be the other person's problem. Don't make it yours. You know, why do you take on and thinking it's you all the time? So that's one of her famous ones. And another one that was so funny, we laugh at this one all the time. Anything I can't stand is a darn liar, because if you lie, you'll steal. So
that one comes up a lot.
Yeah.
You know, although I never had the pleasure of physically meeting your mother, it's like she's with us all the time, because we laugh about your mother's sayings all the time over the past 7-8 years. Her presence in you and as you, the influence on your person, your being, is so evident. And your friends often say, of course, how much you look like her as well.
Yeah.
But,
And each passing day, I look more and more like her.
Indeed. So, you know, it's an excellent segue for our special tribute to
Chick Corea.
Chick Corea, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Mary Wilson.
And Mary Wilson. And I would like for you to just indicate to me for who would you like to open with in providing a tribute to these artists.
Let's start with Chick. Let's start with Chick Corea, which is really interesting. And going over his, you know, I just automatically assumed that Chick Corea was Puerto Rican. And then I'm reading his bio and found out that he was, that the brother was from Italy, his parents. Anyway, let's
really?
Listen to some Chick. Let's listen.
On you, babe.
Wow. I tell you, I just had a holy moment. But since I'm going to read, that's his famous, Chick Corea's famous song, Spain. I'm going to read a little of a bio on him, just a short, because it would be so extensive, right? So turn it up just a little bit, babe. Just want to get a little bit more of that Holy Spirit in me. Ooh. Ooh, yeah. Ooh. I'm feeling it, y'all. I'm feeling it. Since embarking on a solo career in 1966, Chick Corea has been at the forefront of jazz, both as a renowned pianist, foregoing new ground with his acoustic jazz piano, and as an innovative electric keyboardist with Return to Forever, the Electric Band, and now the Electric Acoustic Vigil. His extensive discography boasts numerous albums, beginning with his 1968 classic, Now He Sings, Now He Sobs. A downbeat Hall of Famer and an NEA Jazz Master, 23-time Grammy winner. Did you hear that? 23-time
wow.
Grammy winner and keyboard virtuoso. Chick Corea has attained living legend status after 5 decades of unparalleled creativity and artistic output that is simply staggering. Hold on to your seat. Chick is the 4th most nominated artist in the history of the Grammys. With 65 nominations, he has also earned 3 Latin Grammy Awards, the most of any artist in the Best Instrumental Album category. From straight ahead to avant-garde, bebop to fusion, children's songs to chamber music, along with some far-reaching forays into symphonic works, Chick has touched an astonishing number of musical bases in his illustrious career while maintaining a standard of excellence that is awe-inspiring. A tirelessly creative spirit, Chick continues to forge ahead, continually reinventing himself, and he did make his transition February the 9th. His birth date was, I'm checking that, he was born June 12th, 1941, and he transitioned on my baby brother's birthday, February 9th, 2021, in Tampa. I didn't know he was that close to us, babe.
Okay, I didn't either.
So let's just turn up Chick just one more minute. I got to get a little bit more of this. One more minute. Turn him up.
Here we go.
Okay, so our next tribute is to the beloved Mary Wilson, who was such an angel and a sweetheart. I never had the opportunity to meet her, but I did play some of her music on YouTube. I found a couple songs where she sang, and one song was so incredibly beautiful. We're just going to listen to one of the last interviews of her, and then I'll read a little bit of her bio with a little bit of her sound underneath. So, all right, babe.
All of us at Professor of Rock were deeply saddened by the recent passing of Mary Wilson, one of the founding members of the legendary and groundbreaking act, the Supremes. I mean, the Supremes were the most successful Motown act of the 60s. Not only that, though, the best-selling all-female group in music history. Mary was the longest-running member of the Supremes, carrying the torch of their beloved legacy with passion, dignity, and grace. She was inducted along with Diana Ross and Florence Ballard as the original Supremes trio into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1988. Mary Wilson was such a light, such a sweet and caring soul. She was also an incredible activist, tenaciously protecting the trademark of her fellow musical artists to get the Truth in Music Advertising legislation to be adopted throughout America. She was also a very generous donor for many nonprofit organizations. I had the great honor of spending time with Mary and discussing her personal and professional life at length. Here's an excerpt from that interview where Mary talks about how it all started for her amazing career and about her zest for life. We'll have much more to come about the stories of the songs that she was involved in. Mary, thank you for sharing your incredible talent and giving us all those wonderful classic songs that will be cherished forever. We will miss your glorious voice and your beautiful spirit. I want to ask you, Mary, though, first of all, go back to the very beginning and find out, like, what was it for you, whether it was a song that you heard, someone in your life, an experience that you had that kicked open the door to your mind and made you want to pursue music? Do you remember the moment or a few moments that you were like, that's it?
Well, can I say that my mom said when I was born and the doctor, you know, slapped me, whatever, I started singing. So perhaps it started then. However, you know, I never thought of myself as a singer, even though from the kindergarten, I was always in some sort of little, you know, the choir, the ensemble. I remember in Detroit, we went to school, went to this place, and we, you know, we sang. And I remember that I was probably 6 years old. I don't know, 5 or 6. So I've been singing all these years, but I never thought of myself as a singer. I thought everybody in the world woke up in the morning singing. I felt like that a Doris Day later in my life, you know, because she starts breaking out the song anytime. And I've always done that, but I never thought of it as a talent or a gift. That was just something I did. I mean, I even whistle all the time, too. I'm not that great, but I always whistle. So I've always had it. Like they say, I got the music in me, but I never really thought of myself as a singer.
Your personal life and your career, what are you most grateful for?
What am I most grateful for in my life? I'm most grateful that God has given me the gift of love, because that's pretty much all I am. I mean, most of my friends have great voices. I love them. And I say, why can't I have a voice like Aretha and Gladys? But they say, I got love. So I guess that's it. So that's my gift. I'm most grateful that, you know, I'm able to reach people through who I am as a human being, which is a nice, loving person. Really, I mean, basically, that's who I am.
Absolutely.
Really?
I have absolutely loved talking to you. It's been
Thank
so
you.
Amazing.
And there we are, the great Mary Wilson.
Yeah. So, we're going to play one of her songs. Do we have one of Mary's songs?
No, actually, I have just space for the interview, but I can get that loaded up for later in the broadcast. So,
okay,
just give me a moment to pull that up, okay?
All right. So, so are we ready now to go to? You want? I could just read her bio real quickly.
All right. Go ahead.
She was born March 6, 1944, and made her transition February 8th of 2021. Was an American singer. She gained worldwide recognition as a founding member of the Great Supremes. The most successful Motown act of the 1960s and the best charting female group in the U.S. charting history, as well as one of the best-selling girl groups of all times. The trio reached number one on Billboard's Hot 100 with 12 of their singles, 10 of which feature Wilson on backing vocals. So, you know, she even said in her interview that she didn't consider herself a singer. She considered herself a loving soul, and that was her gift. And I heard that in her voice. I heard the love coming through in her voice. Of course, Miss Ross had the theatrics, and she had all of the other accoutrements. And Miss Ross was a good actress, but Mary, she knew her lane. And she was a beautiful, beautiful soul and a beautiful singer. I heard her sing tonight a song. I've never heard her sing lead. And tonight I listened to one of her songs, and maybe you can pull that up later. We'll listen to a little bit of her singing. And she had a very beautiful voice, very beautiful. It sounded more classical than R&B voice.
What's any particular title song I can look up and pull down for us?
Let's see. I did see one of the songs that I was surprised. You're Just Too Good to Be True was one.
Okay.
And then there was another one that I saw. I think, let's see, Mary Wilson singing. Well, you know that You're Just Too Good to Be True, Can't Take My Eyes Off of You. And,
all right.
That's one. She sings it very classically. It's like a classical voice that she had. And we'll be able to hear just a little bit of that. So now is it time for us to go on to move on to some soul.
Good food for the soul.
Good food for the soul. Is it time for good food for the soul?
Let's see. Where are we now?
Or are we compassion
coming up on?
For the soul?
Oh, well, yes, indeed. Of course, we are discussing compassion for the soul, and that is the Lady Queen Mzuri segment. And let me just I saw a parallel in her story with things that I talk about with you, and it's a perfect segue into your segment of compassion from the soul. How over the years you have felt that you weren't good enough, or that you compared yourself to other singers. And not until recently, when I say to you that your unique signature is who you are, and that is the DNA signature for every soul. Okay, the soul expression is unique to each soul, and that is the power and the light of consciousness that each of us bring. That's the magic and the gift from the non-physical that the soul brings into the physical. Regardless of what your gift is, that gift is unique to you and only your expression. And by name, Imzuri Moyo Mbaye, beautiful heart that sings. And the correlation, she says, well, I guess I got love, then, you know, I don't have to sound like Aretha or I'll sound like this. But what's key is over the years, you have been chosen to sing in spaces, like, for instance, in Columbus, Ohio, at the Martin Luther King. What is the name of the museum?
One of the museums that gives a tribute to
Martin Luther King. Is the Middle Passage, right?
The Middle Passage, yes.
Right. The founder and the curator.
Yes, I was chosen. We won't say who. We won't
I'm just saying a notable, a very highly celebrated, multi-platinum, multi-Grammy award-winning artist, and the curator said that she chose your voice over that artist because of the, not the vibration, but the anointing touch of hearing your voice just has an effect on the soul. That's what she said in so many words. And it was kind of hard for you to accept that because you didn't have the celebrity status of that A-lister, okay, that had all the many, many decades to her credit.
Yeah.
And she chose you over her.
Well, you know what? I just want to chime in. I used to lay on the floor. I mean, I was a music fanatic. You know, me and one of my best friends, Sharon, I used to hang at her house on the weekend. She'd come to my house, and we both wanted to be singers. And so I listened to Marvin. I listened to Teddy. I listened to Smokey. Smokey was, I think, I love Smokey Robinson so much. If he hears me, you know, maybe he'll come on the show. I used to try to sing like, I don't care what they say about me. I mean, but if you listen to Smokey, right? And you say, if Smokey had a felt cure when he heard Marvin Gaye, I mean, Marvin Gaye would make your spine crawl. The sound was so incredible coming out of this man, Marvin Gaye. But you know what? Smokey had his gift.
That's right.
Both of them were great writers, too. So, I mean, you can't say one was a great writer and one was. Both of them were great writers. And Smokey, some people, and when you put Smokey on, nobody could sing his songs. But Marvin, when he said, oh, distant love, I mean, you could just see the women fainting. And I play it today and I still faint, you know.
Funny.
So, you know, it's like, okay, but their voices are completely opposite. Smokey
right.
didn't have that power thing, but baby, when you put on I'm Being With You, and oh my goodness, so many of Smokey's songs, I can't even think, but you just name them and, you know, you just stop in your tracks because Smokey had a gift, and that's what I've, through listening to him and recently growing older and wiser, I said, Imzuri, but your gift is your gift and their gift is their gift.
That's right. And that's the beauty of the divine creator in supreme intelligence, that each person's signature is unique to each soul. And it is in our process of going within that we discover and we awaken to that and we radiate that gift and share it with the world. And David Eaton, the director of the New York City Symphony, he recognized that gift in you when he chose you above, again, another list of the panel in their selection, the only female vocalist chosen to sing for the 10th year commemoration of 9/11, to represent America before all the world dignitaries and ambassadors for the 10th year commemoration of 9/11. In your closing number of your one-woman play, Still I Rise, they
and
chose
that
you.
That was at the United Nations.
Right, at the UN, accompanied by the New York City Symphony Orchestra. So it's been a journey of discovery, but that's how it is for all of us. It's a journey of discovery, self-discovery, and where we own who we are rather than denying who we are. And as we own who we are, then we step into our power. We become conscious of the gift and the unique expression that we have, and we become more empowered as a result.
Well, it's time for me to move into the Compassion for the Soul segment. And I don't know about everybody out there, but with so much going on with COVID-19 and so many other things, you know, people out of work and us feeling compassion for others that may not have work, and you know, just all the thoughts. So I'm going to invite everybody now to close their eyes. They can lay on the floor, they can lay on the bed, they can sit in a chair, close their eyes, turn the lights out, put their hands on their knees or their thighs, sit comfortably. And this is what I do to try and shut out some of the chatter running through my head all the time. That's what we want to do. We want to get quiet and peaceful. And so we're going to do this for about 2 minutes, and then we'll come back. Okay. Are we back?
We are back. Indeed.
For some reason I don't hear you.
Okay.
All right, I hear you now, darling.
Can you hear me now? Okay.
I hear you now. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Okay.
So now is it time for Food for the Soul? I hope everyone enjoyed that little short piece. That's Michelle Burke's Sound Healings for the Heart. And you can go online. And I love listening to that. It brings me so much peace. Sometimes when I have a little trouble sleeping, I just put that on. And I lay on our beamer, which is an energy mat. just go into another, you know, go into another realm listening to that, laying on the energy mat. It's incredible.
Well, awesome. Well, we are now in a place where we have been covering our special segment, our historical and inspirational segment entitled Good Food for the Soul. And this is a journey of discovering the ancient African Kemetan origin of the English adaptation of the word soul. Where did it actually derive from? So as we opened up in previous episodes, we discussed how the word soul means in ancient Kemetic philosophy, it means in ancient Kemetic philosophy, it is derived from the word asar. And asar translates to mean eternal soul. Asar is the was adopted by ancient Greece when the what are recommended or suggested as the Greek philosophers who sat at the feet of the ancient Kemetic priest in their universities and therein set up satellite universities in Athens, Greece. They adopted the cosmic force, the cosmic forces labeled as gods and goddesses of the Kemetic philosophy, and their equivalent of Asar is known as Osiris. So they're one and the same, like agua is Spanish to water in English. It means eternal soul. So today, we're going to go into a little more of the history of the social ethical standard that enabled this culture of ancient Kemet to be the longest continuously running culture in documented human history. And that is the introduction of the philosophy of Ma'at, or the 42 precepts, from which
Solon denotes righteous action based on a very ancient social ethical standard and philosophy consisting of 42 precepts known as Ma'at, which is the cosmic force of order, reciprocity, righteousness, truth, justice, peace, harmony, and balance, symbolized by the winged goddess with a feather in her headdress, in miniature form, sitting on one side of the scale, where one's heart is on the other side, to determine if one's heart is light as a feather. In the judgment scene, as depicted in the hieroglyphic text, indigenously known as Meduneter, which means word of God, or Neter Metu, which means divine speech. Further investigation of cross-cultural correlation analysis, in fact, proves the Ten Commandments of Christianity were derived from the 42 precepts of Ma'at. The pure intent of Ma'at philosophy was later co-opted and degraded cross-culturally, given rise to the birth of Western civilization with the refashioning of blind Lady Justice holding a scale to symbolize the United States judicial system.
Thank you.
Ma'at, the goddess Ma'at, the cosmic force of order, reciprocity, righteousness, truth, justice, peace, harmony, and balance. The symbolism of Ma'at. So we'd now like to open our phone lines before we welcome our upcoming guest, the statesman of statesmen in the theater world, who we like to affectionately refer to as Sir Voza Rivers. But before we open up our, before we introduce Sir Voza at the top of the hour, we'd like to open up our phone lines for those who would like to maybe ask a question or make a comment or just share anything, any thoughts about what souling means to you. It's, in essence, how are and in what ways or what examples can you share with us and the audience how you're loving yourself? And in doing so and loving yourself, sharing that love with others, being more compassionate. The key word is compassion, and we understand that compassion is being sensitive to the distress of others, but not just being sensitive to it, but also having a willingness to alleviate it is just as important as being sensitive to it. Phone lines are 516-387-1911. That's 516-387-1911. And if you're already on the phone lines, then you can just simply tap one on your phone, and we'll bring you on the call. Anything you'd like to add to that, sweetie?
Yeah, I think that
looks like. Go ahead. We got several callers chiming in. Go ahead with your thought, and I'll prepare.
Some people don't know what you're saying in the song. If you could just explain that. Like a ma'at, unku ma'at, if you could tell them what you're saying and what that means.
Absolutely. In fact, that's what's being stated right here.
Join with ma'at. Let her guide your actions. Dua ma'at nebuten means adorations to the goddess Ma'at, who is in everywhere you are. And who and what is the goddess Ma'at? It is a label for the cosmic force of order, reciprocity, righteousness, truth, justice, peace, harmony, and balance. Etep.
So indeed, Ma'at Unku Ma'at means Ma'at is the source of life. Ma'at Nebuten translates to mean Ma'at is in everywhere you are. Kahina Ma'at means to rise up in the morning with Ma'at. Unkina Ma'at means to live with Ma'at. Hasima Ma'at means let every limb join with Ma'at. Let her guide your actions. And again, Ma'at represents the cosmic force that embodies each of us, the soul, right? Of order, reciprocity, righteousness, truth,
righteousness,
justice,
right.
Peace, harmony, and balance. Mm-hmm. Let's take our first caller in, and that's caller, last four is 4771, caller 4771. I'm about to bring you on the line now, and if you can open up by telling us your name and who you are and where you're calling us from. And
Yeah, thank you for asking. I've been listening. This has really been beautiful. My name is, I really love this. This is really a very enriching moment at this time. You asked for my name, and it's Penelope Arisaka, Jamila Arisaka, Fumilayo Ayobami Ya Asantewa. And
wow.
Names were given to me over the years as throughout my travels. And also, my travels, not necessarily abroad, but also here, because your travels are when you meet people of the same spirit, of the same souls. You seem to be attracted to each other, as I've met in Missouri in that phase. So this is a beautiful thing to have, to be able to listen to a beautiful brother and a beautiful sister to express and to enrich us with our heritage, with the knowledge that has been lost. But this is what is needed at this particular time. So I appreciate that. I want to add that Vera was on as well, but she had to go. She just dropped about 10 minutes ago. But Vera was also online, and she says she really, really appreciates this, and hopefully if this happens again, she'll be able to stay on because she wanted to make a comment on all of what we were able to experience the first half an hour, which is really
awesome,
enlightening.
Awesome. Well, Jamila, we thank you for joining
we
us.
We love
on
and
the
appreciate
call.
You. Absolutely, Jamila.
Indeed, indeed. I just wanted to ask you before we take our next caller, could you give us an abbreviated translation of the meaning of your name and its origin?
Oh, thank you for asking me about that because I had to learn that myself. I was given that in Ghana and also in Togo and also here in this country. They were all three ceremonies. Penelope was the first name that was given to me as I was born, because that was what my father, my dad, that is a total name. It is from Greece, but my mom and dad, like most of our parents, were not necessarily African culture oriented, but they often children in our heritage as African, we name our children after either family or someone that we know or something that they remind us of or a particular time of the year. So I understood that I was born an incubator baby, and I only weighed maybe about 5 pounds or maybe four, and I looked like a brown penny, and Daddy came in and said, oh, she looks like a brown penny, a round brown penny.
How precious.
And I was told that someone told him later on in life that Penny is abbreviation for Penelope, and he liked Penelope better. So I have always embraced Penelope, which means, Penelope means the faithful one. The one who has patience, the loyal one, because that was taken from Greek and from the Iliad and Odyssey, you know, one of those Greek mythoses and the myths that she had waited for, Ulysses, for 20 years. And in her waiting, she was on her terrace weaving, and all of the suitors were coming to her. Oh, he's not going to come back. He's not going to. You will marry us. Marry me. I'm the main. And she said, I will marry the person as soon as I finish my loom, because she was weaving a loom. So what she would do during
let's get to the other meanings of your name, because we're running short on time.
Fumilayo. I'm sorry. Fumilayo,
just the meaning.
The keeper of sight.
As we have more time.
Okay. Right. Means patience as well. The loyal one, Fumilayo, and also Ayobami means the one in good or bad times. And Yaa Santawa is the name of a Ghanaian queen. She was a warrior. So altogether it means, and Yaa means a girl, and born on Thursday. So altogether it means the faithful one, the faithful girl, the faithful pretty girl born on Thursday, who brings joy in spite of hard times. That's what those things mean.
Well, that is awesome.
There we have it.
That is pure, authentic cultural expression, and we appreciate you sharing that with us and your divine presence in being with us this evening. Share the word, share the love of souling, and with your friends and neighbors, and invite them all to come and share their story. There's power in the vibrational frequency of our names, and that is who we are as in our soul expression. And that's what we want to come to own and express, the divinity of who we are. And so thank you again, and please do join us again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take another caller now, and this caller is, the number is 6247, last four, 6247, and I'd like to go ahead and welcome you to the call. Welcome to Souling. How are you today?
Welcome.
I'm doing well. How are you?
Awesome. We're Souling over here. Are you Souling?
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. I came in a little late. Andre Minkins he sent me the link, and I didn't see it until late. But, I'm enjoying. I enjoy anything where you can learn. And so I'm learning as I'm listening, and I think that's great.
Well, you're the ultimate teacher.
So tell us who you are. Tell us, introduce yourself to us. I didn't catch your name.
My God. Okay. I already know Missouri from Atlanta. My name is Jeanette Hill. I'm from Atlanta, from Austin, Texas.
Annette Hill?
I'm a playwright. Jeanette.
Yes,
I'm a playwright.
Jeanette. Uh-huh. How are
okay.
you, my sister?
All right. How are you? I didn't know if you remember me or not, but I said, okay, I'm going to jump in here and holler. I'm going to holler at her. I said, and I was just touched when you were talking about the part of your career where you were talking, because I'm dealing with something like that right now, where you're talking about your giftings and your talents and what you're giving. And I remember that your voice is so awesome until I don't even understand where you had an issue, but we won't go there. But
thanks.
I always wanted, that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to be able to sing, and I could not carry a tune to the bathroom.
Wow.
But I wanted to sing like Gladys. I wanted to sound like Patty. I wanted to sound like Shirley Steve. I wanted to sing. I thought that was the only way soulfully to communicate with another person what I was feeling. And my mother had to stop me once, and she said, you know, God gave you the gift that he needed you to have.
Amen.
And if you are not careful, while you are begging and crawling behind another gift that you don't have, you may lose the one that you do have.
There you go. There you
and
go.
It was just amazing to me how many people, I did not realize I was even reaching people with my plays. I honestly didn't. I thought anybody could do what I was doing.
Well, you know,
and what you were saying, earlier.
One of the issues with, I think, women more so than men is that we always feel like no matter what it is, like if you have, you know, long hair, well, I didn't get the long legs. You know, it's always this thing of not being
something.
Satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not finding satisfaction and peace, you know, within yourself.
Exactly. It's the moment of lack. Everything.
Absolutely.
Lack. It's the issue of lack. Somewhere.
And that's where you are touching perfectly on it, because the so-called race, as defined as a means of division and conquest, okay, to disempower, okay, was phenotypically denigrated, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what you're talking about. So, but if we place our identity on our true identity, see, there's only two identities. One of those identities just happens to have a flower of complexity to it. But there is the immortal identity, which is the infinite, the immeasurable, the immortal you that lives forever. That is the consciousness of who you are. When you close your eyes, that is the presence of who you are, your consciousness. And when we go to sleep at night, and that entire new world that comes into place is a projection of our consciousness. But then the other identity is the mortal identity. And that is the identity that starts with the expression of gender identity from the womb, right? To gender identity as to what resonates with one, and then everything else that associates with that, being a sibling, brother or sister, mother or father, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's occupational identities and all these things, and that creates the complexity where we create pain and distress for ourselves because we align ourselves with identities that is fleeting, rather than an identity that is forever. And so the identity that is fleeting is the source of all pain and suffering and anguish. And so we get attached to our gender. We get attached to, you know, our form as to our color of our skin, our hue. But this is just a cloak I call a time and space suit. In order for your consciousness to operate, your immortal identity, which is who you are, to operate in this realm. So souling is defined as a way to express compassion and be more gentle with yourself and understand that that which you have adopted to be real is not real at all. Just like a flower blooms, blossoms, and has its beauty, and then one day it withers away. But the life force of what it is and always will be perpetuates itself as it germinates and drops that seed in the ground and comes back again. The life force is who you really are.
We have our special guest, Sir Voza, is it's 8 o'clock. It's 8:01. We are enjoying ourselves.
Let's hear
all right.
Jeanette, stick around.
All right,
listen
indeed.
To our Sir Voza. We all love him, don't we?
Yeah.
All right, indeed.
Yeah. Thank
well, let's
you
bring
so
him...
much for calling in.
All right, sweetie. Okay.
God bless.
You too.
All right, let's reach out to
Sir Voza Rivers, founding member of Harlem's New Heritage Repertory Theater. Do we have any music we can put on? We need to put on a little chick
in fact,
behind.
In fact,
put a little chick on behind Voza.
Oh, I got something very special prepared for our dearly beloved Voza. Indeed, hold
Sir,
on a
Sir
second.
Voza,
let me put this
Voza
on
Rivers.
Now.
Mr. Rivers, founding member of Harlem's New Heritage Repertory Theater, reorganized as New Heritage Theater Group with three internationally recognized divisions: Impact Repertory Theater, the Youth Division, New Heritage Films Harlem Wood Film Festival, which are producers of documentaries, short films, and showcases for filmmakers of color, and an annual festival, and Furman Theater Rep, a select group of multi-ethnic, multicultural actors, writers, directors, technicians, and designers who support works by emerging and supported artists of color. New Heritage is one of the country's leading African-American theater producers, and Voza Rivers' involvement in the theater dates back to 1964. When he met Roger Furman, a playwright, director, and a member of Harlem's American Negro Theater from 1940 to 1949, co-founded by Fred O'Neill and Abram Hill, which included actors Ruby Dee, Harry Belafonte, Sidney Poitier, Ossie Davis, Alice Childress, Gertrude Jeanette, and Clarice Taylor, among many others. Now, Rivers joined New Heritage with Furman's encouragement and guidance, which left an indelible impression of the importance of black theater and its role then and now in capturing the lifestyle, culture, and lives of people of color locally and globally. Voza, being such a man of distinction who has worked with legends, can only be a living legend himself. In 1984, New Heritage convinced Columbia Artists Management, the producers of a new South African play, Woza Albert, to allow New Heritage to transfer the producer, Woza Albert, an extraordinary and powerful play about apartheid at their theater in Harlem, which became a smashing success. This initiated a historic relationship between New Heritage, Mbogini Njima, and black South African artists that has fostered such major productions such as Njima's Osinamali and Serafina, the musical. Now, both shows went to Broadway and were nominated for Tony Awards. And in 1988, New Heritage presented the stage production of Serafina in Harlem at the Aaron Davis Hall for two presentations and received the FIDAT Award for his work. Now, during the same year, New Heritage received the United Nations Medal for Peace, a Grammy nomination for his work on Serafina. This year, 2021, New Heritage has co-produced in London with the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust and the Warwick University, UK, A Black Girl's Journey, Becoming Othello, starring Deborah Ann Byrd. The legacy of Voza Rivers has been personally impactful in a voluminous body of work of artists internationally, as well as on the successful promotions of Mzuri Moyo Mbaye's work of the Fannie Lou Hamer story. We are honored to welcome and bestow an honor of high esteem to someone who epitomizes true selfless service to his local and global communities. Our dearly beloved friend, humanitarian, and philanthropist, we like to refer to as Sir Volza
Rivers.
Welcome,
yay,
Volza.
Give him a hand. Give him a hand.
Thank you, my... Thank you, my brother. Thank you, my brother and sister, for such a enlightening introduction. It sounds like someone else. Doesn't sound like it's me, but it's all there. It's all there. Thank you.
Indeed, wow. It is all you. Indeed, the divine expression of you in serving humanity, and we're so honored to have you. And I'm gonna turn this conversation over to Mzuri, because it is she that you have had relations with for so long, and in a way of supporting her work and promoting her and stepping in at the last minute to been so awesome. There's so much to share. And so I'm just going to sit back and just enjoy you all's conversation. That's what I'm going to do.
Well, I tell you, this is, can we put just, I know, Volza, you probably work with Chick. Could we put a little bit of Chick Corea on in the back? Because I tell you, I had a Holy Ghost moment listening to that Spain. Let me tell you, it was amazing. So, you know, Volza, I want to ask you, because I don't know, where were you born and where is your family from?
I was born in Harlem.
I figured
my
that.
My family from Charleston, South Carolina, North Carolina, and Jamaica.
Aha! Jamaica. So your father's side or your mother's side, Jamaica?
On my father's side.
Well, you know what's so interesting? That I find a lot of people in Harlem have that Southern and West Indian mixture.
Yes.
And they are movers and shakers. So you were raised in Harlem.
With my grandparents, who on the Jamaican side of things.
Aha, so you have that cultural diversity.
Yes, yes, yes.
Now, being that you're so much into the arts and theater, just give me a little bit of background. Did you study acting? Were you a director? Were you a musician? How did you get into this whole creative, theatrical? I mean, there's nothing that you haven't done. I mean, I was up at Harlem, and you were producing some Japanese production. I mean, you've done it all, Volza, which is just, for me, amazing. So I just wanted to know a little bit about you. Like, were you into acting or singing or a musician?
The story that I tell is that at 20 years old, I had never seen a black play. I walked into a public speaking class in 1964 to take an opportunity to get over something that I was... one of the traits that I had is I was a quiet speaker and I was a bashful person. And because of what was happening in the South, the bus boycotts, school lunch counter, systemic racism that was so apparent, I decided to take a public speaking course so that I could be articulate if, in fact, someone came up to me with a microphone and said, what you're thinking about what's happening in the South? What do you think about Martin Luther King or Malcolm X? And I really wanted to be articulate. So that's why I took a public speaking course. And that very first day in the class, there was a guest speaker, and his name was Roger Furman. And Roger talked about his experience when he was 20 with a group of actors who met in the basement of a library on 135th Street. And as he was describing what happened at the American Negro Theater, kind of excited me, because I grew up on 132nd Street. The library was on 135th Street. That library is where, when I was in junior high school, our teachers took us there every Friday so that we could learn more about our history and culture. And this is now, at the same time, I got a better understanding of listening to Roger, what was happening in that same space. So
what year was that, Voza? Around what time?
Well, Roger was there from 1940 to 1949, but I was 15 years old. I was 13, 14, and 15 years old going to that library once a week. And, you know, we had the librarians and we had teachers talking about different people. I went to a junior high school that had James Baldwin as one of my, not my classmate, but he was there at the same school. We had a visual artist, Romare Bearden, and Jacob Lawrence.
Wow, did you know Romare Bearden?
I met him a few times, yes. But I did not know all of this until much, much later. So 20 years old, I get my first baptism in what black theater could be. And I never wanted to be an actor or a producer. All I wanted to do was to improve my articulation so that I could be heard in a very positive way as I talked about all the injustices that were going around all over the United States. However, when Roger said he was starting his own theater company, I raised my hand to be a volunteer. Reluctantly, he kind of prodded me. And for the first 6 years, I was the box office person. I was the maintenance person. I was the prop person. He taught me how to focus lights and paint sets. And I enjoyed just doing that as a volunteer. And after 6 years, he asked me if I would concentrate on taking over the business side of the theater while he continued to do what he wanted to do, which was write plays, direct plays, and be the artistic director. And with that, my life changed. And when he died in 1983, the board of directors asked me to take over the theater. And then that's when I decided that I wanted to expand his vision and get more involved in producing and presenting works by black people all over the country, all over the world, not just in the United States. And that's how I was introduced to South Africa.
So, I know that you have a relationship with Harry and, of course, with Ruby and Ozzy. Tell me what kind of experiences did you have with them professionally? Did you produce them in anything, or Sidney Poitier? Because all of these names are big stars to us, but you probably knew them all back when before they became names.
Well, remember, Roger Furman was a member of the same theater group that they were involved in, which was the American Negro Theater. So, now, and then, like I said, 1949, that theater ceased to exist, but the artists, the Ozzys and Rubies and Harrys, they blossomed. They were on film, radio, television, they on Broadway, off Broadway. I mean, they were working. When Roger, in 1964, decided to create his own theater company, it was really based on the foundation of what he learned at the American Negro Theater. As a result of what Roger was doing, the Ozzys and Rubies came by to counsel him and give him advice. Abram Hill came by our theater numerous times, and he was the founder of the American Negro Theater, patting Roger on the back that he was working in the tradition of the American Negro Theater, which meant, you know, first-class productions, learning all aspects of theater, from being a box office person to being a marketing director or a member of a board, et cetera. All of those things Roger learned, those guys would come by the theater and embellish it and say, Roger, and encourage him to do what he was doing. And I was sitting there and being exposed to this kind of mentorship. Roger and Ruby D had a special relationship, and with Gertrude Jeanette, who was an actress who was also an older member in American theater, who when Sidney Poitier joined the company, he had a list, and it was Gertrude Jeanette who gave Sidney Poitier some tips on how to get rid of that lisp and be more articulate, because when she joined the American Negro Theater, she had a lisp, and they became good friends. And then
wow.
Gertrude Jeanette in Harlan created her theater company. She also mentored Roger Furman. And it was just like an extended family of friends and relatives all gathered together. Sidney Poitier used to come to some of our productions. But the most important one for me was when Harry Belafonte came to the theater, saw the work, and decided a year after we did it that it should go to Broadway, which he took to Broadway with Paul Simon and a group of other prominent people of color. And I was just so appreciative of what they were able to do for this little small black 99-seat theater on 125th Street and Lenox Avenue.
Well, you know, I have a story about Mr. Poitier. Philip Rose was my
yes.
manager for like a half a second. The great
yes.
Philip Rose, who was
yes,
the
yes.
producer. I know, you know, I'm just telling the
of
audience because they probably don't know who he is.
Yes, you got mm-hmm.
of the Raisin in the Sun. And so we went, Philip and I went somewhere. Oh, we went to see Anne Scratching Thompson's play, I Shouldn't Have Told.
Mm-hmm.
One of those plays, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Poitier was there. You know, I almost fainted. So he said to me after the play was over, let me know what you're doing sometime. And I tell you, I never got over. Of course, I never was able to get in touch with him. But
yeah.
That was a great meeting because, of course, we all loved him. And, you know, he was our black hero, you know, because anytime, you know, when I was growing up, you didn't see black people on television that much. So
right.
I do it today, Voza. When I see a black person, ask my husband, I stop and I say, look, tonight, babe, we got to have... I want to see some Afro-Americans, some black folks in a movie tonight. You know,
yeah.
it's refreshing to see yourself portrayed. And it doesn't have to be perfect stories or anything like
yes,
that.
Yes, yes.
But to just see that. You know, Clarice Taylor was somebody that a lot of people didn't know, but I got to see her in a play about, what was the comedian's name? Moms Mabley.
Yes.
And she was really fantastic. Tell me about her and Miss Jeanette. Miss Jeanette was somebody that I really didn't know until she asked me to come do Fannie Lou Hamer at her theater
right.
at Harlem School of the Arts.
Yes.
And she was really a hoot. She was something else.
Yes.
You call her, she's at 6 o'clock. I'm getting ready to go to bed. I don't know if people don't know. She lived to be, what, 103?
Well, no, when she died, she was 105.
105.
Yeah. But you see, let me just share with you so what happens. I mentioned that in the 1940s, she mentored Sidney Poitier, who had a lisp, and she took a liking to Roger Furman, who was one of the younger members of the American Negro Theater, and she was older. She came to New York when she was 17. She came from the South. When she got to New York, it wasn't that she wanted to be an actress. She was looking for work, and she became the first licensed female taxi driver in
wow.
New York and in New York City. From there, she was working as a taxi driver, going to the American Negro Theater, and was cast in two plays on Broadway. I don't remember the name of the plays. When later on in the 70s, she also decided to create her own theater company. Again, she and both Roger were direct descendants from the American Negro Theater. And I was extremely supportive. And her plays were different from Rogers because of her Southern background and wanting to
Where was Miss Jeanette from, Rosen?
No, you're asking me. I can't tell you that right now because I can't remember. But she came from a Southern state. And,
oh, she did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she had those wonderful stories, and she was also a playwright.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of her plays dealt with the South, plays of manners and customs, and they always had a humorous slant to it. And Ruby Dee, myself, and Woody King, we would always go to her plays because we knew we would be there with belly laughs on the way she did her work.
Wow.
When Gertrude Jeanette was 95, she wanted to hang up her shingles because she had been directing and running her theater company for 30-plus years, and she had made a decision that it was time, health reasons, to give up her theater. So she went to Ruby Dee and talked to Ruby about, you know, hanging up her sign and closing down the theater. And Ruby Dee says, "But Gertrude, isn't there someone, all of these years you taught so many actors, you mentored them, isn't there someone who could step up?" She said, "Ruby, it has been difficult. They stay, then they go. They go for better jobs or for other reasons, but it's been very difficult." So she says, "Is there anyone that you would like to see who you haven't spoken to?" She says, "Well, there's one guy, but he's so busy, Ruby, I don't want to even ask him." She says, "Well, who is it?" She said, "Well, remember when Roger died, Voza took over his theater.
Wow.
If Voza could help me continue my legacy, I would be honored." When Gertrude Jeanette came to me, I thought that it was just too much of me saying yes to Gertrude with everything else I was doing, because I would want to give her theater the same kind of attention that I was giving New Heritage. So maybe a week or two went by, and then I get a call from Ruby Dee.
Oh,
And Ruby Dee says to me, "Voza, Gertrude needs you." And I said,
"Oh my!" Well, you know what? Ruby had it. She was sweet, but she had an insistence about her. I can hear Voza, Voza, Ruby needs you.
Yes. And so with that, when 95 years of age, I then took over Gertrude's theater and kept it up and running under the New Heritage banner with the with the connection to Gertrude Jeanette until she died at the age of 105. And
what
I did a documentary film on her life.
I didn't know that. Now,
born in Urbana, Arkansas.
Yes.
You got it. Thank you, Dahuti. Yes. Yeah.
So, Voza, we want to know more personal things about you. Like, do you have children? And we want to know what your diet is like. How are you soling yourself? How are you taking care of yourself? Because all that you do, I don't get it. I'm not going to ask you how old you are because you look like you're 16. Okay.
I am 78 years old.
That's just not to be. When is your birthday?
December 27th.
Oh, you're a young man. So, but Voza, wait a minute. What do you do to stay in the shape? Every time we talk to you, we got to make an appointment to make an appointment to make an appointment. How do you stay active, and like you're doing? And how do you
God,
take care of
God,
yourself?
God gave me a gift, and it was a gift of being patient. God gave me a gift that said that judge by what you feel in your heart and not what people say. And I have made myself available to those people and projects that touch me, and pace myself. You have worked with me. You've seen my personality, and that's the gift that God has given me. And I can't tell you, there's nothing magic about it. It's just, that's who I am. I have a wonderful family. I have, you know, three kids. One is 52. My son is 52. I have a 50-year-old daughter, and I have a 46-year-old daughter. And so, so they, you know, they have five grandchildren, and I love what I'm doing.
So, tell me, Voza, what is probably one of the most memorable experiences you have about a production, international and local?
Well,
have you produced? I know you've produced internationally. I know that.
Yes, yes. But I think for me, it really was to be enlightened about apartheid in South Africa,
mm-hmm.
because that was a global recognition that what was happening in South Africa was wrong. Colleges were college students were very involved in going down there and getting people to vote. There was a massacre in 1977 in South Africa called the Soweto uprising, where over 400 students were massacred because they wanted to have the government not take away English as part of the languages that could be spoken in school. And the kids protested, and they were massacred. And that was the story of what Sarafina was about. It was those kids telling that story. So when I heard that, that to me was leading up to the other two plays. South African plays were great, but the Sarafina had to be a major, major highlight. I was given permission by the parents and my partners to be responsible for the education of these young 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old young people, 35 of them, coming to another country and then going first to Lincoln Center and performing there, coming to Harlem and then to Broadway. It was an amazing responsibility.
Voza, I'm going to have to jump in because we're winding down. I'll let you finish your thought. But I just want to, before we close, I want to thank you and ask you real quickly what you have on the horizon. If you could just name one thing, because I know you got many things going. So we're winding down.
Well, we did Fannie Lou Hamer with you, and there's another play called 15 on the Road to Freedom around a 15-year-old going across the Pettus Bridge with John Lewis, and it's a musical.
Oh, wow.
And the woman who was 15 is still alive and has written a book.
Oh, wow. So we are we're looking forward to that. And is it going to be virtual first, or is it going to be live?
Yes, it's going to be virtual, and I'll send you some of the clips so you could see exactly what it is.
Well, I can tell you I enjoyed that Deborah Ann Byrd and her Shakespeare story. Keep doing all the great things. Voza, we just love you so much, and I think I'm speaking for everybody in the theater world and in Harlem and all over the world, and particularly Harlem, because you the unofficial godfather mayor of Harlem, and we called you Sir Voza, which so well deserved. We thank you so much. Next week, our guest is going to be Andre Minkins, who is a professor of history and a fabulous actor. I think you know Andre. So everybody,
I know of him, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, chime in next week for us, and we're going to give you a hug, Voza. Thank you so much. Sweetie, you want to jump in and just say goodnight to Voza?
Indeed, indeed. Voza, again, we want to thank you, and many, many blessings to you and your family, and continuing your work and your legacy.
Thank you so much, Dahoudi. This was really great, and thank you, Mzuri. Much love and respect to you guys for the work that you do, too.
Thank you.
Indeed.
Have a great and stay safe.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.